Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 392 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 7th of September, 2018, as I record this. So today I'm talking to Tim Grohl about author mindset, fighting and winning creative battles, and some book launch tips based on his latest book, Running Down a Dream, which is a frank and sometimes brutally honest account of his own struggles. And many of you will know Tim from the Story Grid podcast, and he is known in the industry for being a book launch expert. And he does share some really honest stuff about his own writing situation, about using sort of personal story in writing. And yeah, we have a really good chat. Tim is just fantastic. So into publishing news, not so much news as interesting for intellectual property rights. So Aretha Franklin recently died at age 76, and she died without a will, which obviously Prince died without a will. And it seems like a common thing amongst creatives. And really, I was reading an article about it, which I'll link in the show notes as ever. And her lawyer had urged her to create an intellectual property trust and at least sort out her will before she died, but she never did. It says Franklin maintained ownership of the songs she wrote and did well by them, but also she earned little in radio royalties from smashes like Respect from 1967, because such payments go overwhelmingly to the author, not the performer. In the case of Respect, royalties go to the estate of Otis Redding. And I just found that so interesting, because of course when she died, everybody was putting, you know, R-E-S-P-E-C-T on Twitter, and you know, that was the song that seemed to be most associated with her, but it was written by Otis Redding. And really interesting about royalties and intellectual property rights and sort of the behind the scenes stuff. This is, it's similar in the film industry. We were, when we were looking at the screenwriting stuff and editing and where the money goes, you know, the reason why people are producers often is because IP percentages go to producers, as well as screenwriters, writers of the original works and that type of thing. Of course, actors get paid, but the reasons paid for work for hire, it might be a lot of money, but equally the intellectual property rights are partly in the producer, which is why so many of them become executive producers. So the more you get into intellectual property rights, the more interesting this becomes. So another reminder also to sort out your will. And even though you might not feel like you have a lot, if you don't do a will, in most places, the government will take more than you might have expected. So it's worth doing anyway. And also refer back to the interviews from the podcast with M.L. Buckman on estate planning. Matt has a book on estate planning for authors. And also Catherine Goldman, who I interviewed last year or the year before, on what happens when an author dies. And as ever, you know, I'm a happy, sunny person, but always prepared for death. And in fact, my power of attorney things came through this week. I've sorted out all of these things. Obviously I've sorted out my will and things, but the, you know, in case of brain injury situations, and I know I'm only 43, but, you know, I'm a realist about these things. So I wanted to tell you about that and remind you about IP and the value of IP. And also on IP rights, I just signed my first deal for Korean translation of The Successful Author Mindset, and wanted to tell you about that because, well, first of all, just came through an email to my small press website, curluppress.com. And of course, it won't buy me a house, but every dollar counts. And lots of these small foreign rights deals can really add up. Plus, it's really cool to have a book in Korean and hopefully more to come. And it does go to show that these things can happen organically. I certainly never pitched for this, and it might be worth considering a publishing or publisher facing website, which for me is curlupppress.com. And this is something I learned from, as ever, my mentors, Christine Catherine Rush and Dean Wesley Smith, who have their own author website. And then they also have WMG Publishing, which is their publishing house. And so publishers and rights, people looking to license rights, will be going to a different website than your author site. So for me, now having JF Pen, the creative pen, and Curl Up Press. So Curl Up Press is for publishers and rights agents. The creative pen is for authors, and JF Pen is for the readers of my thrillers and dark fantasy. So these are very different audiences. So something to think about. And of course, if you're just starting out or you haven't even written your first book yet, you don't need to be thinking about these kind of things. But what I want to do on my podcast is continue moving the discussion forward into what the possibilities are for authors in this amazing world of creative opportunity. So that's why I will always continue to share. I don't know about always. Talking about the rest of my life, but certainly I have no plans to go away at the moment. So I'll continue sharing my journey, which obviously I am coming up to 10 years with the creative pen, and like my 28th book, I think this is coming up soon. So yeah, obviously if you're just starting out, these are not the types of things you might need to concern yourself with right now, but just be aware of the much bigger possibilities out there for the future. Also, interestingly, this just happened, and I was going to talk about Waterstones in the UK anyway this week, but Waterstones, if you're not in the UK, Waterstones is a high street bookstore, so a chain, and it was recently in April bought by an investment firm. And then today, as I record this, they have just bought Foyles, which is a London-based independent bookstore, family-owned for a number of generations, and has just sold to Waterstones, as I said, which is in turn now owned by an investment firm. Now, when the sale to the investment firm happened back in April, you know, I said there will definitely be changes. They will definitely be looking to increase the value of this company so that, you know, they can return value to their investors, which will mean selling it on or doing something with it in a couple of years' time. So I was going to mention it because what they have done this in the last week or so, and I'm a Waterstones buyer. I mean, I buy print books from Waterstones and other independent bookstores. But when I went in this week, what they have had up until now is those cardboard loyalty cards with stamps on, like physical stamps on a physical card, what you might get in a coffee shop. That's what they've been using. And what they did when I went in this week, and I actually bought a book, I've got it here on my desk, actually, it is called Theatre of the World by Thomas Reinertsenberg. It is a beautiful hardback book about maps. And of course, I'm moving, I'm going to move back into the map walker book soon. So, and I just love these. Oh, it's gorgeous, gorgeous cover, like gold embossed, really good quality hardback. That's the type of book I buy in Waterstones. So I went in and took out my card, and they said, no, we're moving to digital card. Like, they gave me a plastic thing, but they wouldn't give it to me without an email. So that's really interesting. So what this company have done is move people to email. And I logged on to, you know, confirm the card number and my email address and everything. And they're already, you know, sort of finding out what I like. They're going to log the books I like. And I imagine they are going to use that data to try and sell me more books, which I'm fine with because I'm a book buyer. But it's so interesting because one of the very first things that this investment company has done to increase the value of the business is implement an email list for Waterstones. And I mean, the sheer value of that company, where if, let's say, even 1 in 10 people sign up, and I think it will be more because I think most book buyers like me are, you know, want that type of thing. So they're going to end up with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of emails, which are definitely, and the data they collect is going to be valuable. So I thought that was fascinating. And then with the purchase of Foyles, Foyles has an iconic store in Soho in London near Tottenham Court Road. It is brilliant. Whenever I'm in London, I go to that store. I love it. A lot of people love it. And even though the high street is suffering and Foyles made a loss in 2017, so they probably, not a massive loss, but a loss, anyway, and they probably got it at a discount, but the terms weren't disclosed. So I see that this is a consolidation of the high street, which is happening anyway, but also this is an increase in the value of the Waterstones business. I don't know whether Foyles own their buildings, but if they do, it's a very valuable property in central London. Really interesting moves. Obviously, I've talked before about the change in society, the way the high street is changing. And I guess it's similar in a way to the way Barnes & Noble is struggling in the US and, the ex-CEO suing for wrongful dismissal, which I mentioned last time. And I also mentioned with Tim, although he hadn't heard about it. It's very interesting times in bookselling. And this kind of consolidation is certainly not over. We're going to see more of that. I think of it more as a changing of the guard. I don't think it's the death of the high street. I think it's probably the death of some big brands as other brands rise up, and millennials seem to prefer artisan brands, small brands, much more personal brands than the big names that dominated when the boomers were primary consumers. Sorry, boomers, you are no longer primary consumers, although you are still very powerful and important. Yes, you are. Whereas I'm Generation X and we're just not important at all. Nobody markets to us. But that's fine because we can just watch as everything happens. So what does this mean, that this Waterstones thing? I think the problem with it for authors in Britain and for any American authors or international authors selling books into Britain is that print books in the high street, so mainly traditionally published authors, fewer book buyers will mean heavier discounts and fewer independent stores with conglomeration. But I hope we will see new independents rise in their place, as I think we've begun to see in America, more independent bookstores and being run in different ways with events and, stuff that makes the bookstore more of a destination as opposed to just somewhere you buy books, which, let's face it, we can do on the other stores. So that's some interesting kind of publishing and IP related news. So on my personal update, I am in the editing phase for Valley of Dry Bones, my 10th arcane thriller. And I actually have it here on my desk, printed out and fully, I actually have the last two chapters to hand edit. I basically, after I finish the first draft, I print the whole thing out and I edit by hand on physical paper. And then I type my changes back into Scrivener, because the act of typing it back in means I often find other things as I go through as well. And then that version is going to my story editor next week. So Jen, my wonderful editor, who's kind of my first reader now and sort of understands my world and always helps with what I might have got slightly wrong. And then obviously I've got line edits and beta readers. I have some specialist beta readers, some Americans to help me with, because I have New Orleans and also San Francisco in the book. So very excited about that, as well as some other specialists who will all be listed in the back of Valley. And then I will be prepping for the book launch process. And talking about book launches, which I will be talking about with Tim, I also, and we'll be talking about this in the podcast, but Tim and I are doing a free webinar on book launch timelines. And I'm excited about this because obviously I've been through this a number of times now, like 27 times or whatever, but I think book launches are something that can always be improved. So the webinar is on book launch timelines, the four types of book launches, when to start your launch, the book launch timeline checklist, and a live Q&A with me and Tim on Thursday, 20th of September at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And if you go to booklaunch.com/pen, P-E-N-N, you can register for that and get the replay if you can't attend live. And of course, that is one, it is total webinar-tastic season because also this week, hopefully you'll get this in time. I'm doing one on how to get your first or next 10 book reviews with Mark Dawson and me, obviously, Thursday, 13th of September at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And if you register, you can get the replay, the creative pen.com/sept13 SEPT13, so short for September 13th, obviously. So thecreativepen.com/SEPT13, or the one with Tim on book launches, booklaunch.com/pen, P-E-N-N. And you can join me for both of these webinars if you like. I will be at both. So you're welcome to come too. And if you do hear a problem in my voice today, by the way, I have had a cold. So the edits have been quite a challenge, actually. I've really had to pace myself. But one very important thing when you do this full time is booking your editors in advance. So I'm determined to meet my editor date of Monday. When this goes out, the book will be going to my editor. Fun times. Okay, so thanks as ever for all your emails and tweets. I love to hear from you. You can tweet me at The Creative Pen. Let me know where you are when you're listening to the show or anything you particularly learn. I haven't had some pictures for a while, so please tweet me your pictures at The Creative Pen with where you are, even if it's folding the laundry. I love getting those shots. a couple of tweets. Lily Bloom said, great interview with Kinga from Publish Drive. Very excited emojis with distribution to over 400 stores, some of which give access to 800 million Chinese readers. I want to be part of this. Fantastic. Thanks for your enthusiasm, Lily. I'm still getting emails and tweets about the interview with my mum, which is lovely. Atulia K. Bingham says, this was one of my favourite podcasts. Very moving, actually. And your mum is sensational. Thanks, Atulia. And also, amusingly, I asked about reading my own fiction audiobooks and asked what you guys thought. And I also, in my JF Pen email, I sent out to my newsletter asking them what they thought. And I've had a lot of response, a lot, from both my fiction readership and from you guys. And unfortunately, it is split exactly down the middle. I mean, every time I got an email that said, don't do it, I then got another email that said, please do it. So I'm really struggling with this. Two examples from you lot. Imogen Clark on Twitter says, audiobooks read by the author. I always get so much more from listening to a book than reading it anyway. A book read by the author is a real treat, because they put all the emphasis in the right places. They might not do accents, but I know that I am truly getting the book as the author intended. You should do it. That's from Imogen. And then Wendy, this is another example email, because I got both types in so many numbers. Wendy says, don't do it. I love listening to novels on Audible, but a big part of the experience for me is the narrator and the ability to do voices and act. To have a narrator with specific dramatic and linguistic talents makes the experience really special. So I would encourage you to find a great talent to showcase your work. And what's so funny, also, there's been in some of my private Facebook groups for my courses, a couple of people have been asking about what to do with audio. Should they go exclusive? Should they go non-exclusive? And this is another example, you know, the tyranny of choice. It really is. I mean, only a couple of years ago, we couldn't even do audiobooks. So now we've got so much choice, it's hard to know what to do. So I'm still thinking about this. I am definitely going to do my own short stories. Arcane 10, Valley of Dry Bones, will go through my normal arcane narrator, Veronica Jaguer. Sorry, I do have a cold. Veronica, who's amazing, will be doing Arcane 10 because she's done the whole series. But I'm still debating about Map of Shadows. I'm also almost definitely going to do a kind of podcast, not weekly like this one, I can't do weekly, but a sort of sporadic audio extras, so sort of back matter, and there'll be at least, you know, one episode for each of my novels, and there will be and stories as well, and then I'll read my short stories too, and I will put those on ACX as non-exclusive short stories and also podcast them too for the marketing side, and then I might end up doing interviews, but you know, I think there'll be enough to go on with as I, you know, progress through research, and I might just do extra stuff for my fiction audience about my process and my the research stuff, because all my novels are highly researched and a lot of people like them for that reason. So yeah, I think this is really interesting. If you are considering doing audio for fiction, yeah, I think this is an interesting time. So today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark, and I can actually partially thank them for my foreign rights deal, as the Korean agent quoted the ISBN that I used through Curl Up Press. So I thought that was really interesting. And of course, quite recently, I reported that my print revenue share, so of my total book income, 21% is now print versus 10% last year. And that growth has certainly come from doing Ingram Spark and also increasing the number of print books that I use. So obviously we've also now had the announcement that CreateSpace is going. So KDP Print and Ingram Spark together is what I use for my extended distribution. I produce all three print editions of my latest book, How to Write Nonfiction with Ingram Spark, the paperback, the workbook, and the large print editions. Ingram Spark also do hardbacks, which I am still considering. If you want to sell to bookstores, universities and colleges, libraries, and anywhere that requires a discount, then you need to use Ingram Spark, and your books will be available in the catalogues alongside other retailers. And you can also order author copies at a great price. And especially if you're in Europe, because one of the downsides of KDP Print is author copies are more expensive. So Ingram Spark has author copies that are cheaper. You can also get them for live events or selling direct. You can use bulk discounts, as Dave Hendrickson discussed in episode 377, and also Karen Inglis discussed just a couple of weeks ago about selling to schools. And remember, if you only use KDP Print and or CreateSpace, you are available in a limited number of places. So if you are serious about print distribution, using Ingram Spark as well expands your reach. They have fantastic help, and they also have an awesome podcast, Go Publish Yourself, which says something about their sense of humor. And they have a conference coming up in Nashville. And I'm sure once I hear about that, I will be reporting about what has gone on there. So it's your content. Do more with it through IngramSpark.com. Thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon as well. It really means so much to me. Thanks to new patrons, Charity Tamaseb, Mark Leslie Lefebvre at Stark Reflections on Writing and Publishing, a fantastic podcast. If you miss Mark's voice, you can find him over there. David 13, which is a great name. Kai Kaiser or Kisser, and Kitten Holiday. Some more great names. And thanks to Joseph Mello for increasing his pledge. So I really do appreciate your support on Patreon, like the tweets and emails and everything in the comments. It really demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. So you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month or a couple of coffees a month if you're feeling generous, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio. And I often add extra audio during the week as well. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get into the interview with Tim. Today, I'm back with Tim Gore. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good to have you back on the show. Just a little introduction. Tim is the author of Your First 1,000 Copies. He is a book launch consultant at booklaunch.com and the co-host of the Story Grid podcast with Sean Coyne. And his latest book is Running Down a Dream, Your Roadmap to Winning Creative Battles. And it's a fantastic book, and we're going to talk about it in a minute. But Tim, first of all, you've been on the show twice before, and the last time was 2016, which seems so long ago now. So what's changed? I know. And what's changed for you in the last couple of years, and any reflections on, I guess, the changes in the publishing industry as well as your personal journey?
Yeah, probably the biggest change has been doing more with Story Grid. So I had probably been doing the podcast about a year. And so now we're at 3 years. We published the first book kind of out of the podcast, which was Running Down a Dream. I'm now working more with Sean and Steve with Black Irish Publishing. So just kind of more projects and doing kind of a more variety of things, but still working with writers and in publishing. As far as the publishing changes go, I feel like it's more of the same. Like, things continue to change, but at the same time, I feel like they're just going in the the general direction that people like you have been talking about for a long time, of controlling your destiny, of, you know, looking at your, you know, looking at your career as a standalone thing and always making the best decisions. And to me, the only thing that keeps happening is more options for writers, which I think is a good thing. So not a lot, I feel like, has changed in 2 years is kind of the broad picture.
Yeah. And it's funny that, because sometimes it feels like everything's changing so fast. And then sometimes it feels like, okay, it is just more of the same. And actually, as since you're in America and I'm in Britain, and at the moment we're hearing quite a lot about the whole Barnes & Noble CEO, like as we record this, there's stuff in the news about that situation. And one of the things I think is really interesting right now is print sales. And I wonder, since you've obviously had your own book out and you see a lot of book launches, do you think print books for indies might be the things that is shifting, because everyone's focused so much on ebooks for so long?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me. I don't keep quite a finger on the pulse of that side of things as probably you do and other indie writers do. When I'm looking at my book sales, it's actually surprised me how evenly split it has been between audio, digital, ebook, and print. And so, you know, when in my work with traditionally published authors, especially on the business book self-help side, it's always been heavily print. Like, people still in that kind of space tend to want a print book in their hand. And that's kind of what I figured with another nonfiction book. But it has been pretty heavy on the digital. And I'm seeing the reflection of what we've been seeing for years, which is audio is growing. And so, so I don't know. I mean, I haven't kept as much of a pulse on that. And I honestly, with what's going on in our political climate, have not watched the news. I have not read or watched the news in probably about 3 months. So I don't even know what you're talking about with Barnes & Noble. Like, I just don't pay attention, because it's so saturated with everything in our political realm that I just can't take the stress. So, so I don't even know what you're talking about. But as far as that goes, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I tend to, like, I go back and forth, because it's hard for me. Like, I read almost exclusively digital when it comes to fiction, while I still on nonfiction prefer to have print. But I'm, you know, I can't, who knows what other people want. That's just what I like. And so, you know, what I like about things is it's just so easy to offer it in all the formats now. Mm. And so you don't have to make the decision. You can just make it available in all the formats and then follow whatever you need to follow. And then I just ordered you know, even through Black Irish, we do print on demand through CreateSpace. And so I just keep a box of 200 books literally in the back of my car and I just give them out to people and stuff. So it's just like, I'm just constantly, I don't really care. It's like whatever is working is the direction I'm going to go.
Well, that's a good pragmatic approach. We should say for you and anyone else listening then, as we record this, the ex-CEO of Barnes & Noble is suing them for wrongful dismissal. And the court case shows that another publisher was going to buy them, but then pulled out of the agreement. So it's a really interesting time because a lot of their stuff is being revealed in this court case. So,
interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. A lot of their financials and that type of thing. So just an interesting time. But I totally get like not registering the news. I think that's very healthy. And it's interesting because you're a very honest guy and your new book, Running Down a Dream, is super honest. And at times I almost had to look away from the page. It can be quite brutal about yourself. Like you're sharing things that many people would look at you and be like, oh, wow, you know, Tim, you're at the top of the tree and you're like super successful. And yet you reveal some really dark times. So I wanted to thank you for sharing that. And I know a lot of people are really pleased, I guess, that you're sharing that. But what drove you to be so honest in this book?
Well, you know, I really didn't want to be, and I worked hard for about a year and a half to avoid it. It was originally just going to be this set of tools that I've come up with to overcome resistance. So it was going to be, you know, some kind of title like, you know, 30 tools to overcome creative resistance, you know, something like that. And my original draft, I had, I showed to Jeff Goins and I showed to Sean Coyne, my editor. And Jeff said, this is a great collection of blog posts, but it's not a book. And then Sean said, agreed with that and said, this is a book that people will immediately forget. They'll read half, put it on their shelf, and immediately forget, which is, you know, not what I'm going for. And so So Sean just kind of kept pushing me on it. So I'd write pieces of it. I'd send it to him. It's not there yet. He'd kind of give me some things to think about. And I just fell into this place because I really wanted to turn it around quick. Like I wrote the first draft over 2 years ago. And so I wanted to just turn it around quick. And finally, he kept telling me no, that I just decided I was going to keep working on it until he said it was ready. And whenever Sean said it was ready, I'd finish it. So I had rewritten a bunch of parts over like Christmas and into January, and I sent it to him. And once again, he's like, nope, this isn't it. Like, you're not telling the stories. You're not really making it personal. Like, you need to ground this in your own story. And so I kept trying to be, because my first two books are about book marketing. It's kind of this like guru on the hill guy, right? I went out and learned all this stuff and now I'm going to pass down what I've learned to you, which is fine. Like that's most books and that's what I learn a lot from. And I kept trying to write this book the same way. And so Sean and I were actually on the podcast. It was back in February. And we were, you know, he kept kind of pushing me, and I was trying to open the book with the story of when I quit my job to work for myself, because that story makes me look good. Like, you know, here I am like feeling good and I've like planned and I built this thing and I'm going to go like quit my job and start out on my own. And then I told him the story of about 6 months later when I ran out of money and had to ask my parents to send me a check so that I could pay my mortgage, pay my house payment that month. And I just started talking about how I didn't feel good enough and I didn't feel like I could do this and I felt broken. And it was the only time on the podcast that I broke down crying. Like I wasn't like sobbing, but like I'm like choking up and struggling to talk. And like Sean started laughing and he goes, I think what he said is, I think you found your book. And so what it did, so what I ended up doing is realizing that this book is not about me being the guru on the hill. It's about me touring my ruins and bringing people along for what it really takes to run down a dream. Because what I've realized for myself and working with so many people is nobody gets away with it. Nobody gets an easy path. Even if the first thing they do takes off and it's successful, they still have a long road ahead of them. And so it became really important for me to tell the truth, my truth, about what this looks like and the kind of things that it took to get to the places that I wanted to be. And so it's one of those, you know, Joanna, it's one of those things where it was just the book. Like, I've never really experienced it before, but it was like, I just knew this was the book. And if I wrote anything else, it wouldn't be telling, you know, Stephen King talks about it, wouldn't be telling the truth. And so every morning I would drop my kids off at work, because I do my writing right when I get to my office. I drop my kids off at work, and on the drive back to my office, about 20 minutes, I'd start thinking about, okay, what painful story am I going to tell today? And I was going, some of the stuff in the book I had not even thought about for years. You know, I had good friends that were friends with me during the time of the book that read the book, and they're like, dude, I didn't even know this was going on. I'm like, well, yeah, these aren't the things you're like, woo, this is awesome. Let me tell you about, you know, when my wife couldn't afford, you know, had to leave the grocery store because we didn't have enough money for groceries. You know, those aren't the things you share. But it was like all these things, all these like little nuggets of how to overcome creative resistance, I learned through something painful. And so it was the same book, right? It's a set of tools of how to overcome creative resistance, but it's wrapped in the true story of how I found those tools.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And it's so funny because I also this year I wrote How to Write Nonfiction, and it was meant to be a really quick book that was like, here's how to do a nonfiction book. And then I bored myself stupid with the book and just went, I'm not publishing this. It's awful. And then I realized what was missing, like you, was the heart. You know, the heart of the story. And then I went back to my journals and found the moment when nonfiction changed my life and added in a whole load of heart. And that's basically what you've done. You've taken your tools, as you say, and added your heart. And that's what people remember. It's so funny, right? Yeah. They are like, yeah. I'm like, 30 tools? Wow. I think I can remember like one or two of them, but I can remember your stories in the book, which is so amazing. But I have got to ask you then, because it's a very difficult line between sharing your heart in order to help others and writing for therapy.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I had this conversation. So in the book, I talk about this woman, Jill, who helped me with a lot of stuff. And so we haven't talked in a while. And so actually the book coming out kind of precipitated us getting back on the phone, and we're talking. And I was telling her about a bunch of stuff I'm going through and working out with my own like spirituality and religion and all this kind of stuff. And I was talking about how like, I could see me being able to write about this in like 5 years, at least 5 years. And I said, I just feel like it's weird. Like, why do I have to wait so long to write about this stuff? And she's like, because you want to be an author. You don't want to be somebody who is working out their shit on the page. Yeah. And so what I felt like was, you know, the book has an arc to it. Right. And I felt, you know, to the best of my ability, I had a surprising but inevitable end. But that end came, like, I figured that out a couple years ago. And it was just, I had come full circle, you know. So the stuff that I was writing about that was really hard, I had also dealt with. So I don't feel like I was doing therapy on the page, because I have done plenty of therapy. For me, it is, you know, have I come to a conclusion on what I'm trying to talk about? Have I come to a natural end where I feel like I know what I'm trying to say? Where I've read some of those books, some memoirish books, where people are just kind of like, they're trying to work through their issues on the page. And I feel like most of the time at the end of those books, there's no real conclusion. There's just kind of like, and it's still awful, you know? And so I just tried, you know, for me, it's like, okay, this isn't you know, I really wanted to write this book to help people that have been in the places that I've been. And the only way I think I can help them is I think I figured out a few things through all of that pain and process that can help them. So I don't know. I mean, for me, it's just this kind of natural break of like, I know when I'm ready and I know when I'm not ready. And for me, it was just like, I knew what I was trying to say. Like there's a lesson in the book that I hope everybody gets, and it's at the end of the book. And you can see where I was leading to that through the entire book. So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's one of those things that are different for different writers. But I didn't feel like, I mean, the other thing is I wasn't looking for affirmation. Like, I don't need anybody to agree with the book. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care whether you agree with the book. I mean, it's my story. It's hard to like argue with it, although I've gotten plenty of emails about it, but it's like, you know, I have something to say, and I'm going to say it, and I'm going to use my story to say it. And this is what I think Steve Pressfield does so well, is all of his books are all his personal stories, but like he's saying something, right? So it's not just like, I'm going to share with you a bunch of pain so that you'll go on this journey with me. It's from the beginning of the book, he's got something he's trying to say, and he's just using his stories to say the thing.
Mm.
That's probably the best way that I could put it.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And it's so funny because I have a book, obviously, on the successful author mindset, and again, share my stories in there. And I feel that there's another book I want to write about the shadow, and I'm not ready to write that either. It's like you say, I've been wanting to write it for several years, but there's no way I'm ready. And I think it might take, I don't know how long, it might take the rest of my life, actually, to learn the shadow enough.
You know, I think that's a maturity. I mean, that's a maturity thing of just like, you know, Stephen King talked about, so one of my favorite Stephen King books is 11/22/63, one of my favorite books of all time. I mean, I got to the end of that book. I literally like, so I'm reading on my Kindle, and like, I shut the Kindle and I set it down, and I sit there for about 5 seconds, and then I just bawled like a baby, just sat there bawling. Like, I was in a hotel room in Las Vegas. I'm sure lots of people cry alone in Las Vegas, but like, like it was just this, like, it just broke me. Anyway, I was listening or reading something about an interview with him, and he had the idea for the book like in the 70s. And he felt like he wasn't ready as a writer. He felt like the country wasn't ready to revisit, you know, JFK's assassination. And so he like shelved it until he was ready to write it, whatever, 30 years later or more. Mm. And to me, that's a mark of a mature writer of like, I know when I'm ready to write something. I know when I'm not ready to write something. And I think there's too many people. I mean, we could go on a rabbit trail about too many people that are pretending to be experts that don't really haven't worked out. You know, what my wife keeps telling me about this spirituality stuff is she's like, you have not lived it long enough to test it. Like, what if what you're saying is not true? Like, just because you believe it today, are you still going to believe it in 2 years or in 5 years? But you put it in a book and that moment in time is locked. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, you have to be ready. You have to like let it stand the test of time long enough that that you've worked out your issues and you actually know what you're trying to say. And I think too many people don't have the maturity to wait. You work on something else. You know, it's not like you know, it's not the only idea I can come up with to write. So write something else while you let that book be ready, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And there are a lot of fantastic stories in the book that are really useful, but you also do have practical tools. So I want us to kind of maybe pick one that has come, like a lot of people have said, like, this was really helpful. What would be sort of one of your more practical tools that people can learn as well?
The one that I've gotten the most feedback on, which is surprising to me because it's the one, you know, that you've been doing this long enough where you're like, I've been saying this for 10 years and people are still interested in hearing me talk about this. How is this possible? But probably the most feedback I've gotten is the section on systems, of systematizing things. And so, you know, what I am always trying to do is anything I'm doing more than, It kind of, if I back up and look at it, basically anything that is not all that important to me, I try to systematize, right? So you can't systematize your writing. You can't systematize, you know, date night, you know, with your spouse. You can't systematize the rides in the car with your kids having conversations, but you can systematize what you wear, what you eat, how you set your calendar, like how you get to work every day, like getting your car worked on, like anything that is not your work or important to you. Try to figure out a way to just systematize. And all a system is doing the same thing over and over to get predictable results, right? Mm-hmm. So the simplest version of a system is like, if you walk in my front door on the right, we've moved like six times and it's the same silver dish that we move to every house. It's right inside the door. And as soon as I walk in the door, I drop my keys in there. And I'm sure most people have that. They either keep them in their purse or on a hook inside the door. And the reason we do that is so the next morning when we're leaving the house, we don't look for our keys because we know where they are, right? So we do the same thing over and over to get predictable results. And all I'm saying is apply that to every area of your life that you possibly can. You know, do it the same way every time. Do things at the same time every time. If something takes more than five steps, turn it into a checklist, right? When I edit the podcast or get it ready for the editor, there's like 30 steps. They're in a checklist in Evernote. You know, when I set up a new webinar, there's probably 50 steps. They're all in a checklist in Evernote. And I literally, every single time I do one, I open it up and I go through every single thing because I don't have to remember it. I don't have to think about it. I just follow the steps. And so I go deeper into it in the book. But like that to me is the thing that helps me get more done in less time, right? So I'm a writer. And then I run my own business and I'm partners in two other businesses and I only work about 30 hours a week, right? So it's like at some point, something's got to give. And so the thing that gives is like I systematize everything and try to turn things into things that I don't have to do over and over and over and over. Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot of creative people, if they got better at systematizing the non-important things in their life, it would give their mind so much more space to be creative because they wouldn't be worrying about so many things that they don't, once you systematize it, you don't worry about it anymore.
I think that the reason people like to hear you talk about it, and this is the third time you've been on this podcast, and I think we've talked about it three times, I still don't have a checklist. pretty much anything. I still rely like on my brain to just remember. And it's so funny because I so hear you. And I know people listening are like, oh, he's so right. I just totally have to do that checklist thing.
Joanna, it's like the amount of peace you feel because like I never forget a step when it comes to editing my podcast. I never have to remember anything. I literally just do it the same way every single time.
I think people resist it though, because there is this, you know, talking about creative, everything creative. And, you know, you've talked about creative battles. Maybe one of the creative battles is I'm a creative. I just do stuff versus, you know, organizing and the idea of a checklist. I was a management consultant, you know, working in IT for 13 years. And to me, like things like spreadsheets and checklists and, oh goodness, the software we used to do for like systems testing and things.
Oh yeah.
Just like that kills my soul.
Yeah. I'm not saying go crazy. You know, my in-depth software is Evernote, which is just fancy word. And, but like my thing is it allows me to be creative. I think that's the thing to remember is that I don't care about the podcast. Like I just need it. I need it edited and off my plate. Like once I've recorded it, of course I care about the recording, but after that, it's just like, it's the thing that you just need checked off your list, right? So I don't care about like, there's nothing creative about it. It's literally just like processing files. And so what I have just seen over and over is like the more that I systematize, the more that it frees me up to focus on the things that are important. And then the other thing is, when you get to a place that you can hire somebody, you have all your, you just hand them all your checklist. So I hired a guy to help me like set up my webinars and set up all this stuff. And I literally was just like, here's the video walkthrough and here's the checklist. And then I was done. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have to show them how to do anything. It was all already done because I created the systems. So yeah, you got to do it. Like, just do one, just pick one thing, create one checklist.
Yeah. It's funny because I guess I do have something like that for my podcast because I have four other people who help me with it. So similar. So when there's other people involved, I do that, but it's like our own process. But that, I think that's partly what I like about the book and about you as a person. Like you managed to combine the heart piece with the process piece, which I think is why, you know, your business is successful. So I want us to come on to book launches because you have obviously recently launched your own book, Running Down a Dream, and that's also your business is book launches. But sometimes the business of doing book launches for other people can be different to doing your own, right? So so what has worked really well for this book launch? What have you been surprised about? What has changed? Or what, you know, is there anything you've been like, oh, okay, that's interesting, that I need to do more of that and less of that?
Well, so overall, I kind of flubbed the launch, the immediate launch. And I have like, it's funny because I'm sitting here and I'm like, I have a great excuse, but I'm like, I always rolled my eyes when my client said the same stuff. But it was really like an unfortunate series of events basically took four major life events of like moving a product launch for a client, my book launch, and then a week-long training I did. And they were supposed to be spread out over 2.5 months and everything got rejumbled where they're in a 3.5 week period. And so I literally was like, I had no time. And my kids were out of school. My wife was in grad school full time. And so I did about 15% of what I would have liked to do for the immediate launch. But I'll talk about the launch and what's happened since and what I think has been interesting. You know, for me, what's been interesting is the reaction of my audience wasn't as much as I thought it would be, of my immediate book launch audience. And then like afterwards, or kind of in the middle of it, when I'm like, you know, they're just not reacting the way that I thought. Like there's this core group of people that are really excited, but everybody else is just kind of ignoring it. And my wife was, she's super smart. And she's like, people have come to you for years for book marketing and they have not given you permission to talk to them about the kind of stuff you're talking about in your book. Mm-hmm. She's like, so they're not ready to hear you talk about that. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's true. And I am, you know, with the book is like, I did with the book what I tell everybody else not to do, and it's fracture your brand. Like if I wanted to maintain a solid forward-facing brand, I would have come out with a third book on book marketing. And instead I came out with this memoirish, you know, self-help. creative resistance book. And so she's like, you need to set your expectations. So that was a little weird. I was really happy with how Steve's audience reacted.
I was going to say, that's your audience, right?
Yeah. So they bought a ton of copies of the book and they got behind the book. I've gotten tons of emails from his audience saying, you know, they've never heard of me, but, you know, they're really excited. You know, they really love the book and that kind of thing. And then, you know, my thing that I teach everybody and that I really am doing myself is like my goal is to do something to promote the book twice a week. Right. Because I have a full time job. I'm writing my next book. Like I've got plenty of shit to do. And so but I want to get this book out into the world. So I'm just focusing on what can I do every week to just move the book a little bit further. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing lots of podcast interviews. And so this is probably my sixth or seventh one. I'm doing lots of those. And then I'm really trying to break into spheres that I've never been, right? So I'm trying to get into like the world of music and musicians because I'm in Nashville, which is like music headquarters. And so I'm doing stuff in the music world. I'm going to be on like some art podcasts. You know, I'm reaching out to lots of artists. I'm doing stuff on Instagram and reaching out to people on Instagram and sending books out to people. And then Stephen Sean's kind of methodology of marketing is to basically give a book to anybody that will take one. And so I drive around with a box of books in the back of my car and I just give them out to people. So like I do jujitsu with like this local politician. So I saw him at a coffee shop and I gave him a copy of the book and he, you know, texted me the next day and was like, I'm halfway through the book. I love it. You know? So it's just like, so I'm looking at like this, this is a book that I hope is still selling 10 years from now. And so I'm really taking the long game approach, which I really, you know, I recommend. This is where I am taking my own advice. Like so many authors get so caught up on the first week or first month of sales. And if that doesn't go as planned, then they kind of just get discouraged and they let the book die and they move on. Mm. And my launch, my first week was not what I hoped it would be. And also not what I know I could have made it to be. Right. So I just was not able to launch it the way I wanted, but it's like, okay, that is like a tiny percentage of the life of the book that first week. And I have a long time. And that's what's so fun about books is they have a timeless nature about them, right? It's like somebody will, you know, people are reading The War of Art for the first time and it's been out for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so, that's the stance that I'm taking is every week I'm going to do at least two things to promote the book. That's 104 things a year, at least. If I do 104 things to promote the book, it's going to have an impact. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. The launch was meh, but like continuing to promote it is fun because I'm getting it into new places. Like I was like exchanging this email with this guy that runs one of the top three art podcasts on iTunes. And he's like thinking about coming out with his own book. And like, so I was like helping him. And like, so it allows me to connect to people that I would never get, never really have a reason or opportunity to connect to. So I just try to keep it fun, try to look at it as like, I'm just looking to connect with other nerds that are like me and talk about the similar stuff. And in the process, I'll sell some books, which I've been taking.
Yeah. And I think the good thing about having a book that is more mindset-y, creative-y, memoir-ish is that it does have that longevity. Whereas I'm sure you found, as I found with How to Market a Book, which is on its third edition now, things that involve any kind of tools go out of, you know, tools as in like your book has tools, but they're more processes and stuff. Whereas if you mention anything technical, things change and you have to change stuff, right? I mean, who would have thought, like you mentioned CreateSpace earlier, whereas again, maybe you missed this, but CreateSpace is gone and it's now KDP Print. I mean, this is just now anything that mentions these things has to change. So it's like, goodness me, what a pain in the neck. So I really like the way you combine those two and that makes it have longevity. But what, you know, you have helped a lot of people launch bestsellers in launch week and you do have a process for book launch, mm-hmm. don't you? And we're actually going to talk about it on a webinar, which is very exciting. So tell us about what people can learn in the webinar and then we'll give people a link.
Yeah. So, you know, every launch that I look at, I always start with two questions. I'm trying to figure out what type of launch I'm running, and then I got to figure out what I'm going to do on that launch, what the checklist is. And so I've been, you know, that's always whether I'm working with a client, whether, you know, I'm answering emails or whatever. You know, if you come to me and you're like, well, I've got this book coming out, like, what should I do to launch it? I'm like, okay, well, what type of launch are we running? Because there's four different types of launches. And then once we know what type of launch we're running, it helps us know what we should be doing and when we should be doing it. And so I have like a checklist and a timeline that I go through to make sure that I know exactly what to do to launch my book. And so that's what we're going to go over on the webinar is I'm going to teach those first two things. Because what I found, I really like this idea of, because so many times with launches, we get caught on the tools, right? Like, how am I going to use Twitter? How am I going to use a blog? Or should I start a podcast? Or should I be on podcast? And it's like, okay, well, asking those questions first is kind of like asking, okay, I want to build, you know, a kitchen island for my kitchen. what tools should I use to build it? And it's like, well, you don't really even know what you're building yet, right? Like, do you have a plan? Do you have a blueprint? Like, if I just go out into my shed and start grabbing boards and like hammering them together, I'm not going to build anything. I need to know what I'm building first. And so actually, this is what my wife and I did a while back, is she wanted a kitchen island. I know enough about building stuff that I'm not going to like cut off a thumb, but I can't just like go build something. So we went online and we started looking up plans and went looking up blueprints on how to build one. We found one we liked. And lo and behold, the first thing that the plan did is it told you what materials and what tools you needed to build it, right? And then you just go step by step through, and the plan is what tells you which tools to use. And if you start with the tools first, you never just go to the hardware store and buy a new tool and then like, what should I use this tool for? I'm going to use this tool for something. But yet that's what we do with launches. So what I walk you through is basically the blueprint of a launch and what it, how to know what kind of launch is right for you. So how to find which plan is right for you. And then the checklist that I use, it's funny because it's the exact checklist I use for my own launches, to the point that when I get hired to do a launch, I log into my own course and download the checklist because that's the one that I use. So we're going to go over that. I'm going to share the timeline and the checklist and basically try to answer all the what and when questions when it comes to book launches.
Fantastic. And that is going to be Thursday, 20th of September, 2018. And the link is booklaunch.com/penn. And if people go to that afterwards, that'll just redirect to some of your amazing content anyway, I'm sure. So fantastic. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to that once again. And what's so funny is we've done webinars before and I always write stacks of notes. And brilliantly, the timing for me is that I have another book launch coming up.
Hey, perfect.
It's like my 26th book or 27th. Seventh book or something, and I still feel like every time I do it differently. So maybe I just need a new goal, which is to write my own checklist or to modify yours.
Yeah. That'd be perfect.
It would be. Okay, so final question, because we're running out of time, but I want to just refer people to the Story Grid podcast, which you've been doing with Sean Coyne for years now, right? Like three years.
Yeah.
So one of the things, you began that show talking about your fiction project, and I've got to ask, what is the update on your fiction for anyone who doesn't listen to your show? And how is fiction very different to nonfiction slash memoir?
Well, first of all, it's so much harder to write.
So glad you said like, that.
Oh my God. It's like, and really, so I'm trying to decide how honest to be here. So I'm 2/3 through the second draft. So, and the second draft is miles ahead of the first draft. But a week ago, I literally was writing an email to Sean explaining to him why I can't finish this book and I need to move on to a new project. And I was just like, I'm done. I can't write this. I've been putting it off for weeks. And I was just like, this is never going to come together. And it was one of those, like, so then I started thinking, well, what's he going to say? I know what he's going to say. So I just shouldn't make him say it. And so, I think the thing that's hardest for me is, so when, and it's almost writing, Running Down a Dream almost made writing fiction harder, because I dropped into this place where I feel like Running Down his Dream is the first time I like wrote something, you know what I mean? Like, I've been writing for years, but it was the first time I really dropped into that place where it was flowing and I was writing something meaningful. And then when I was done, I knew I was done. Like, Sean had not seen it. And I was like, this is done. This is the book. This is what I've been trying for 2 years to say. And I cannot find that place in my fiction. I'm like trying all kinds of different things, but like, I feel like all of my characters are just cardboard cutouts or like kind of half-assed versions of characters I've seen in other books. And like dropping into that place, I just have not, I've done it on some short fiction where like I've been able to do it, but like trying to string together 100,000 words from that place is just been brutally difficult for me, and is still brutal. I mean, I have not figured it out yet. Mm-hmm. And so the book flows better. It is a better story than the first draft. It's definitely hitting the mark, but I'm not, I feel like, so my very harsh criticism of it is a completely forgettable book right now. And so trying to figure out how to drop in that place with characters that I've made up is really hard for me to do. Mm. And honestly, if you have any feedback on that, that would be super helpful.
Yeah. Well, no, I would like to come back on that because firstly, it doesn't have to be 100,000 words. I mean, that's a big thing. Yeah. Like I think so many books are too long at 100,000 words, but then I read thrillers and dark fantasy and stuff like that. But then also I think that, you know, there's the quote that a novel is never finished. It's only abandoned. I can't remember who said that, but I was talking to somebody else and I've written about it in my mindset, but creative dissatisfaction is what drives novelists to write the next book, which is why so many write, like, now you found your voice. I think you found your voice with Running Down a Dream. And I feel like I don't know whether you should abandon this book or try another one, but if you've now found your voice, you may find it easier in the future to dip down into that flow or whatever. But also, yeah, I don't know if I ever feel my books are finished. Like, there's never a point where I'm like, this is it, this is the end. And in fact, you talk about this in Running Down a Dream. You say there is no finish line. Like, there is no end. There's just the next goal. And I think trying to write like your magnum opus novel with your first novel is unrealistic, and most novels at the end of the day are forgettable, and most people don't read a novel, you know, they just read a novel to have fun and escape. Like, sometimes maybe we take ourselves too seriously, so yeah. Maybe just lighten up a bit, Tim. There's my pep talk to everyone.
All right, sounds good.
Come back on it if you like.
No, that's good. I mean, it's just yeah, it's
that's
just
a tough one.
Yeah, it's tough. And so, but that, yeah, I will take that to heart. I can probably stop destroying myself over the book constantly. So
I think you should. I mean, and I'm talking to myself, like I'm editing at the moment, Valley of Dry Bones, my next arcane thriller. And, you know, last week I thought it was awful. Today I thought it was pretty good. You know, I know it would just go back and forth. So I send it to my editor next week. And then I'm like, at the end of the day, it's just fun. Like, my readers want some more of this, these characters. They're having fun. I read thrillers to escape. If I can help someone escape for a couple of hours, then I've done my job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's helpful.
Yeah, good. Well, I hope at some point, I mean, I really enjoyed Running Down a Dream, and I hope at some point to read one of your novels. Maybe we'll just be friends for another like 5 years.
No, oh my God, no. It has to end at some point. So
yeah, well, you can always publish it under another name.
Oh geez. Well, no, because I got the podcast. So like at some point we've got to finish something. That's the thing.
It's tough. I having a podcast means everyone's tracking what you're doing. But no, I really appreciate your honesty. And I know it will help people listening, because I do think nonfiction / memoir self-help is very different to writing a novel. So good to hear that. Not good to hear you're struggling, but I think
no, I hear you.
It's the truth. Okay, so just tell us where people can find you and everything you do online.
Yeah, so I've kind of set up a new site for kind of to point to everything, the books and everything else, at runningdownadream.com. And then on the book marketing stuff, I have booklaunch.com. So those are kind of the two places to find me.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, Tim. That was great.
Thanks, Joanna.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Tim today, and always great to hear such an honest response to creative challenge, which we all go through. And I know we didn't talk too much about launches, but that is because we're going to share it all with you, including the book launch checklist and other launch tips on our upcoming webinar, which will be on Thursday, 20th of September, 2018 at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And you can register for the replay. Go to booklaunch.com/pen. P-E-N-N. Right, so next week I have a great interview on travel writing 2.0 with Tim Leffel, and another Tim, but a different Tim. So after 20 years as a travel writer working all over the world, Tim has some fantastic tips on how to earn money with travel writing in the new media landscape, and some great thoughts on building intellectual property as well as working freelance, plus his thoughts on living in other countries if you want a better life for half the price. So I know if you're interested in travel, you'll find this useful. If you're interested in freelance work, this is useful. But it's a fascinating interview for sure. So have a wonderful writing week, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.